There are several psukim in Tanakh that speak about the significance of remembering Yerushalayim, remembering the Beis HaMikdash. The most famous psukim in Anar Bava, in Meshkachei Yerushalayim, Shkachemini, the psukim in the Navi Zechariah, Tzioni Dorish Einla. More comments that the Navi is bemoaning the fact that nobody's asking about Tzion, no one's asking about Yerushalayim, the Chal Deboi Drisha, that we're supposed to ask, we're supposed to think, we're supposed to remember the events of the Churban. So the Gemara tells us that these halachas of Tzion Yidorish Einla really express themselves in two ways. That on the one hand, we're supposed to remember the Beis HaMikdash Bivinyona, we're supposed to remember the way things were in the good days, and that's why there's a whole series of halachas that are called Zechel HaMikdash. And this is the reason why we shake a lulav for the entire week of Sukkot, even though Minat Torah you only have to shake for the first day. According to many Rishonim, that's the reason why we count for Omer Bizman Hazeh, even though technically Minat Torah you don't really have to count unless there's a Korban Omer. That's the reason why we do Korech at the Lev HaSeder, because Zechel Mikdash Gilil. So there are a lot of different dinim that were instituted by Chazal. Then there were different minhagim that were adopted by Klal Yisrael. The walking around the Bima on Sukkot for Hoshana, this is also Zechel Mikdash. There are many things that we do that are Zechel Mikdash, both mitam takanas achamim and mitam in hagim, and that's one dimension of remembering the Beis HaMikdash. And the Gemara explains to us that there's also a requirement to remember the Beis HaMikdash b'chubana, to remember the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, and this is the sugya that appears in the end of the third parak of Masechet Bava Basra, that at the time of the second Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, so the people didn't really know how to react. Everybody sensed that you have to have some kind of a Zechel Churban, but they weren't quite sure what the right mechanism would be. So the Gemara tells us there were some individuals who went too far. They went to the extreme. They stopped eating meat. They stopped drinking wine. They stopped doing anything that was all these very, very, very extreme forms of avelos for the Churban. And the Gemara says that Chazal didn't approve of that. That the Chazal approved of their motives. I mean, they thought what they were doing, their heart was in the right place. But Chazal didn't think that those kinds of activities were acceptable, because they fell into the category what's called the Gezeirish Ein Rov Atzir B'chol Lamed Bo. That you have to be very careful when you make dinim the Rabbanon, that people can be able to live up to them. It's time to have more dinim on the books that nobody keeps. That's not enough problems with the mitzvahs that are on the books. You don't have to add up new things that are not going to be able to be kept by the people. So the Chachamim Shibosa Ador felt they have to tell people they shouldn't eat meat, they shouldn't drink wine. So the whole year, Zeichel HaMikdash, Zeichel HaChorban, they thought that was going to be going a little bit too far. But Avot Bichein, Chazal said the idea that you have to have some Zecher, that is correct. And then Chazal instituted a whole series of different Zecher and Mikdashes that appear in the end of the third parak of Masechet Bava Basra. So in light of that idea that really fundamentally we should be in a form of Avelos, there should be an Avelos theoretically throughout the entire year, but it's just not practical to do so. So this is the background for what the Gemara tells us, the Mishnayis, and the Gemara tells us in the end of Masechet Tainis, that Chazal did institute certain real Avelos, specifically around this time of the year. Around the time of the year, before Tisha B'Av, the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so Chacham Shabbos Ador did institute certain forms of Avelos, and the Gemara speaks about two different time frames of Avelos for the Churban. The Gemara speaks about the time frame of Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, the week that Tisha B'Av falls out in, and the Gemara talks about Mishadichnas Av, the beginning of Rosh Chodesh Av. Those are the only two time frames that appear in Chazal per se, with different degrees, different forms of quasi-avelos that are associated with those times. In addition to those times of the week of Tisha B'Av, and what we colloquially call the 9 days, that phrase, the 9 days, if I'm not mistaken, I think was made up in the 1940s in some summer camp or something, the phrase, the 9 days, you don't find it. To the best of my knowledge, it's not in the Gemara, not in the Rishon, not in the Shulchan Aruch, not in the Mishmur, nobody there. The phrase, the 9 days, it says an American, I think, innovation. And I think the phrase, the 3 weeks, are also an American innovation. Somebody in camp made it up also. So in Halacha, I call the Ben Hatzorim, the times between Shavuos and Tammuz and Tisha B'Av. So in addition to the time frames that were instituted by Chazal of Shavuot Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av and Mishanichnas Av Matne B'Simcha, there was another time frame called the 3 week, called colloquially the 3 weeks, that connects the bridge between Shavuos and Tammuz and Tisha B'Av, which also expressed itself to a certain degree of avelus as well. The practices that we have in this period of time, what we call the 3 weeks, are not Medina de Gemara. The whole institution really is not really Medina de Gemara, but it is a minhag that has been adopted by many, many communities, primarily Ashkenazi communities have a little more chumras in this area than the Sfaradim. But pretty much all the Ashkenazi communities have adopted this period of time as being a special unique time of Avelos, and certain practices, certain hanhagas are observed at this time as a fulfillment of Tzion Yidorish Eilah, as a fulfillment of Yimesh Kachech Mishlan Tishkach Hemini. So like the Rav used to say many, many times, that when you have a Minhag Yisrael, so Minhag Yisrael is not just in a vacuum. So all of a sudden, the Jewish people decide they're going to stand on the head on Tuesday. That doesn't mean anything. A Minhag has to have a kiyum. A Minhag has to be based on something. A Minhag has to be trying to accomplish something. There has to be some kind of fulfillment in the world of halacha that the Minhag is trying to do. So here, there's a purpose for the Minhag. The reason why you're not doing such and such, that's a fulfillment of Tzion Yidar Shemlon. That's a fulfillment of Mimishkach Yishlam Tishkach Mini. Those are things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into Kisra Kodesh, HaKadosh Baruch Hu put into Nevi'im, put into Ksuvim, that He wants us to be aware of the Churban, how we do it, how we express ourselves, what it is. Those are the actual practices of Eteres Minhag, but the fundamental concept is a Torah concept, is a Halachic concept, is a concept that is based very, very much on Psukim from Kisra Kodesh. So what exactly are these Minhagim? How do these Minhagim express themselves primarily in our communities? So the Ramah quotes a series of different practices that, again, for the most part, Ashkenazim have adopted as expressions of Avelus. These expressions of Avelus are not unique to the 3 weeks. We find almost identical practices when it comes to Sfiras HaOmer. Sfiras HaOmer is also not in the Gemara per se. We talk about the Avelus of Sfiras HaOmer. The events, the historical events that precipitated the Avelus of Sfira do appear in the Gemara. That's the Gemara of the sixth Pech Maseches Yevamos. The fact that these are therefore deemed to be days of nihugim, of customary avelos, doesn't appear in the Gemara. It appears in the works of the Gaonim, or a few hundred years after the Gemara. The Rishonim and the Sefer Yevamos quote from the Gaonim that the Jewish communities accepted upon themselves certain forms of avelos, again, commemorating some of the tragic events that occurred at that time in history. So you have almost identical minhagim when it comes to the 3 weeks, as we have in other contexts, considered the days of Sfira. So the two practices that are signaled out in the Ramah as being expressions of Avelus at this time of the 3 weeks, so one of them is the notion of haircuts, and the other is the notion of chasanus. So the notion of taking haircuts, that's what the minhag, at least in the Ashkenazi community, is that one doesn't take a haircut for the 3 weeks. So there is a big question, we spoke about this many times, about how this plays out for us with Manazeh, in terms of a shaving, whether shaving is included in this minhag or not. So the... most of Jewish history, it wasn't such a relevant issue. People generally had beards, so maybe they trimmed the beards once in a while, but most people weren't walking around cutting the beards during the 3 weeks, so it didn't really mean that much. So that was a question in the much, much later generations as to what the practice is. Is trimming one's beard considered to be, or shaving entirely, is that considered to be part of this minhag that was adopted by the Ashkenazi communities? So there was a big machlokes in the contemporary, post-contemporary Rabbanim, really the last generation about this, between Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Soloveitchik, that Rabbi Moshe was of the opinion that shaving is considered to be part of haircuts, and therefore it should be refrained from during the period both of Sfira as well as during the 3 weeks. The other thing is that Rabbi Moshe concedes that's only a minhag, so as a minhag it's bound by the rules that govern other minhagim. One of the rules that govern minhagim, one is not mechuyav to suffer a tremendous amount of money to observe a minhag. Whenever a minhag constitutes a big shas hachak, as a general rule of minhagim, whenever you have a big shasar chak, you have extenuating circumstances, so then we're very lenient when it comes to minhagim. Those extenuating circumstances could be that there's no food, like there's a famous maisa with the Rabbi Yitzchak Ochanan back in the 1800s, where there was one Pesach, they couldn't get any potatoes, and you have to figure out which famine in Europe that there was. I always thought it was the Irish potato famine, it wasn't the same famine, but whatever, they couldn't get potatoes, so they had to... be matir certain other foods. So the Tzulchan was matir, the kidneys, the rice and beans and other things that normally Ashkenazim wouldn't eat on Pesach, because people were partially hungry, that they couldn't get any potatoes. Just as a total aside, I learned something very fascinating last week about potatoes that I learned a lot of new things. But I learned something very fascinating about potatoes. So where I was, we passed a tremendous, tremendous lake. And apparently this lake is the source of all the water of Idaho. All the potatoes that are grown in Idaho all come from this particular humongous lake. So we made the ha'ara that through HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. I'm sitting and eating cholent in Bergenfield, and I have a piece of potato in Bergenfield, and it's being that potato. All the potatoes in America, 99% of them come from Idaho. So I'm buying a potato in Bergenfield, eating a piece of potato kugel. That potato kugel is being nourished by a lake in the 2,000 miles away from here. That's HaKadosh Baruch Hu's godless Abayri. Anyway, in case you're interested in knowing that, the piece of information. Anyway, so back to this. I was also told that it's impossible to get a sweet potato in the entire state of Idaho. that they're against sweet potatoes. They only go regular potatoes. That's what the caterer, the guy in charge of food, told me that you cannot get a sweet potato in the entire state. It's also, anyway, back to this, back to the more important stories. So the Ramosha said that whenever you have extenuating circumstances, like monetary extenuating circumstances, a guy's going to lose his job. So Ramosha writes, a guy's going to lose his job, you don't have to observe a minute. That's where Ramosha has a few tshuvas like this. He writes, and the first tshuva in Or Chaim says a guy's going to lose his job because he's wearing a yarmulke. In the olden days, not that when I was a kid, so almost no from people wore yarmulkes out in the workplace now. But some things have changed for the most part. But not that long ago, people did not wear yarmulkes in the workplace. People were concerned. People were afraid they're going to get this, going to interfere with their parnasa. So Ramosha had his famous tshuva that if you really believe it's going to interfere with your parnasa, you're not mechuf to wear a yarmulke in the workplace. Wearing a yarmulke is only a minig, and you're not mechuf to lose your job to jeopardize your parnasa in order to fulfill this minig. So in the same light, Ramosha writes, let's say a person's afraid they're going to come to work looking like a shluch. The guy's a lawyer. He's got to present this case in front of the judge. The guy hasn't shaved in a week. So Ramosha says that if you're afraid it's going to following this minig is going to interfere with your parnasa, you're not mechuf to jeopardize your parnasa in order to observe this minig Yisrael. That was Ramosha's approach towards the shaving. So basically, Ramosha Taka can't shave for 3 weeks, but there are some exceptions. So the Rav had a whole different take on shaving. Spoke about this many times. The Rav held that the minig of not getting haircuts in the 3 weeks and during Sfira was a minig that was ke'en avelus. That means it was patterned after hilchos avelus. Which part of it is avelus? So it's not shiva, it's not shloshim. It was patterned after the avelus of yud beis chodesh. Yud beis chodesh for a parent. So the halach is as follows: the Gemara says at the end of my katan, after shloshim is over, so a person's allowed to get a haircut for a regular relative, but for a parent, you have to wait until you go b'chaver. You have to wait until you look like a mess. If you look messy, then you're allowed to get a haircut. So there was a machlekes at poskim. Does that mean every time you have to wait to become a mess again? Say a guy gets a haircut after 2 months or something, and then he has to wait another 2 months, another 3 months, or once, once it's mutter, it's mutter. That was a machlekes in the Gedolia Poskim. So the Rav was of the opinion that one could be making on that shayla, and he was also of the opinion that the avelus of the 3 weeks is basically no different than the avelus of the Beis Chodesh. Therefore, when it comes to haircuts, a guy gets a haircut a couple of days before Shavuos Batamuz, so he doesn't look like such a mess, comes to Tishbuf, he still looks basically okay, so he should wait till Tishbuf to get another haircut. But if a person shaves every day and he goes 2-3 days without shaving, he looks messy, so he should go to Bechaver. His wife, his best friend, tells him that it looks like a mess, so he's allowed to go get a haircut, allowed to go shave at that point, because that he's reached the point of actually go Bechaver. So there are different opinions in the Poskim. So those who have the practice, those who clean shave and shave all the time, every day during this period of time, so they're following the view of the Rav. Those who don't shave during this period of time, only when they need it for work, so they're following the view of Rav Moshe. Those who don't have to shave for work, they have different jobs, or they're on vacation, whatever it is, and they don't have to bother working. So many of them follow the minute that they don't shave at all during the period of the 3 weeks. The second niyug that we have during the 3 weeks that it also appears in the Ramah is the idea of not having chasanus. So that idea that originally appears in the Ramah only in the Gabi chasanus, the Magen Avraham extends to other kinds of celebrations as well. If you have chaylas, kudim, you have dancing, singing, circle, all kind of, a lot of musical entertainment and stuff. So that's also considered to be inappropriate. Again, not a din. It's considered to be part of the minhag, extension of the minhag of the Ramah, of not celebrating, not having weddings during this period of time. And again, a similar kind of expression during the days of Sfira. So of course, there's a very technical question as to how far this minhag goes. The problem is, in Europe, they didn't have too much excitement, there wasn't too much entertainment, so they didn't dance, they didn't dance, and they didn't do too many other things. So in America, this became a very, very hot topic about how does this play out in terms of other things. So the big question was, what about music? Is it general music? There's no dancing, no singing, singing. There's no partying, just listening to music. Is that included in this minig or not? So some people have this idea that in Hilchos Avelus, a person's in over for the whole year, they can't listen to any music whatsoever. Music is off limits. So if you look at Shulchan Aruch, it's very hard to find anywhere that it says that an over is not allowed to listen to music. The closest that it says that an over is not allowed to listen to music is the Ramah quotes different practices about whether an over is allowed to go to a chasana or not. Gemara says in the third Pekha B'Kotan that an oval for of the Ibo the whole year is not allowed to be Nichas Lebeis HaMishta. It's not allowed to go to a party. So it's not clear exactly what's called going to a party. So there are different opinions about this, and then there are different opinions in Rishonim. What if an oval goes to a party, doesn't need it to party? So some Rishonim say as long as he doesn't partake of the meal, he can go there. And others say no, they should stay away from parties in general. So there are more quotes, different practices about this. And there are many who have a little bit of a pshar when it comes to a wedding, to go to the wedding proper, so that's not right. But to go just at a chuppah, the chuppah is not such an excitement going on there. So there are many who have that practice. So many follow that pshara, that to go to the chuppah, it's not necessary. Your fourth cousin, six times removed, is getting married, and you don't really have to be there on a regular day, so you don't have to go run to every chasana when a person is in Avelus. But if he feels he has to be at the wedding, so he should just go for the chuppah, and definitely shouldn't eat at the wedding. If somebody wants to come and make him a plate of food, and he should go eat in his car in the parking lot, okay, that's something else. But he shouldn't participate actively in the enjoyment part of the wedding. So the Ramah writes that when you go to the chuppah, they should be careful to leave before the celebrations after the chuppah begin. So that's the question, what exactly does that mean? What did the Ramah mean? So the Ramah mean that the dancing the chasakal back from the yichud room, did they do that in Krakow? I don't know how far the walk was. We were in Krakow together, I don't know how far it was from the yichud room. But I don't think it wasn't exactly the marina. So it's not clear exactly what the Ramah means, that they should stay away from the mizmeite chasakal. So some say that it meant that's when the fiddle on the roof, that's when they all started to play the music. So you see for that Ramah that you're not supposed to listen to music. So let's say you don't say anything to that Ramah. The Ramah's talking about wedding music. He's talking about after chuppah, it's excitement, it's labor, it's dancing. A guy's sitting listening to a shweki song or something. So that's not the same thing. There are different opinions about this. There are those who have a pshara between live music and tape music. So some suggested that the music's not live anyway, so that's not really music. And tape music would be permissible during these periods of the year. So yesh v'yesh. So this already created a whole world, a whole new world of minhagim that have been created in the last 30 years. Chiluk edeyas within tape music. Is that a cappella? Not a cappella. What is he? I have a messor from Rabbi Willig about a similar issue where I once asked Mashal about something. So he said, I cannot pass in a child that doesn't appear in Shulchan Aruch. So that's the answer also. When somebody asks me about tapes, I can't answer. But a guy asked me, can you listen to a cappella and not during the 3 weeks? Well, I don't know. Maybe no. I'm not sure. So again, there are those who follow the Ramesha with Machar and all this. Ramesha, you can't listen to any tape music. Ramesha, you can't listen to tape music the whole year. Ramesha had his own sheet based on the Rambam. You can't listen to music ever, Zechel Chorban. So we said, nobody listens to them, but nobody follows them. But at least during the 3 weeks in the sphere, you shouldn't listen to music. And others say that you can listen to tape music, yesh v'yesh. So the bottom line is there are some are more lenient about this, some are more machmir on this. And usually in the NCSY programs, we tend to be a little more lenient about this. Messer from Torah Terrorist, that a little bit more makel about tape, the music, especially when they feel that they need it for Kirov and for other inspirational purposes. So again, yesh, shall we listen both those who want to rely on listening, just listening to a CD or something. See, whatever people listen to anymore. Whatever you listen to, so those who want to make it, those who want to be machlek b'maisha, so why not a tov aleichem, a bracha at this time of the year. There is another practice during the 3 weeks. It actually appears in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote these minhagim of Avelus. The Shulchan Aruch does quote a practice from Rishonim not to recite Shechiyot during the 3 weeks. That doesn't do with Avelus. That has to do with because it's not nice to say Lazman Hazeh. Say Shechiyot of Kiman Lazman Hazeh. What a great time we have. It's a terrible time of the year. So it's not right to say Lazman Hazeh. It's interesting. Somebody called me just a couple of days ago that, we don't treat this time of year being such a great time of year, especially the 9 days. So the Gemara actually has this. The Gemara says that it's not such a good mazel for Klal Yisrael during the days of the first couple of days of Chosh Av. Therefore, if you have a court case against a non-Jew, you should try to push it off on to lift the Tishba if you were able to. So it was a fascinating thing. I was talking to somebody the other night. I was at a Sheva Brachos. And somebody was talking to me about the minhag that the Ramah writes about trying to get married at the second half of the month rather than the first half of the month because it's the Lavanus B'milua, so it's the greatest Simon Mazel, Bracha, etc. So he was talking to me about different things that we do that are expressions of good Mazel and bad Mazel, in Mazel Yisrael, and eating sheep's heads at Rosh Hashanah, all the different things that are talking to me, a whole story about what we're waiting for the Chassid and Kala, a whole talking about Mazel. And then Punk, I got a call, and I said, I'm going to take this phone call. So a fellow calls me, and he told me that he has he's applying for a variance from the town to do some construction in his house or something, and he got scheduled for Zayin Av. So he wanted to know whether that falls into the category of pushing off Hilchus Baruch Hall. I'm not sure what the answer is. So I I said to him, it's not an Isser. The Gemara, it's not an Isser to go to court with the Goy during the 9 days. I said, it's not. The Gemara says, you're not going to win. It's a bad mazel. So if you want to risk it, so risk it. It's a joke call. I don't know. So I just found it was very humorous, coincidentally, that as I was learning to talk about the Sugya's mazel, I told the fellow who was talking, I said, I just got a shayla, a mazel shayla. I don't get those shaylas too often. So, no, no. And back to the story. So there are different minhagim that we have at this time of the year. Some of them are based on Avela, some of them based on the Yonim of Lesman Hazeh. Then we move into the Mochamer time of the year, and that's which actually appears in Chazal. That's B'shenichnas Av Amat B'Simcha. It comes with Shkosh Av, so a little bit of Avelus is supposed to be expressed. This is really Medina de Gemara. What is included in B'shenichnas Av? So it talks about Matam and Masav Matam, and one is supposed to minimize the amount of business that one does. There are different opinions in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say this applies to all kind of business, and some Rishonim say it only applies to like very joyful kind of business. So according to the Machmir, it doesn't mean you can't go to the store to buy potatoes. If you're an item, you buy potatoes, but you have to you try to minimize. You don't have to go unnecessary kinds of shopping and stuff, because buying things, at least for some people, is joyful. Probably for most of us here, we should be marbe the masamata. You go to the mall every day. You want to make yourself really miserable, but we defer to our better halves who somehow enjoy the shopping experience. I'm still, after many years of marriage, still trying to figure that one out. But another time, another place. Anyway, so. Other things that Chazal single out that one should try to avoid at this time is binyanim shel construction, different kinds of binyan, constructing kind of things, building houses, etc., are things that one is not supposed to be doing at this time of the year. So there's a big, big question. This is the most common shayla that we get, again, 100 of these shaylas. These are the shaylas they get in December because people are planning their construction activities for the summertime. So these are the early shaylas about having non-Jews doing work in the houses during this time of the year. So basically, there is a machlekes in the Mishnah about the following. Let's say if I hire a non-Jew to do a job, and he's what's called a kablan. He's working at his own time, his own pace. He's working, all right, he's doing whenever he decides to work, doesn't decide to work, whatever, that's a kablan. So the many Mishnah hold that as long as I hire the non-Jew beforehand, and he starts the job before, now he decides to take off a week before the 9 days, and he decides to pop up and come back on Rosh Chodesh, so he's doing things at his own pace, a mikra din, that would really be permissible. And other Rishonim say no. Other Rishonim say that he's doing it in your house, in your property, that would be inappropriate. So there was actually a machlokes Rishonim about the Shabbos. The original machlokes about this was about Shabbos. Can I have a? I'm not allowed to ask a non-Jew to do malach for me on Shabbos, but here I'm not asking him to do malach on Shabbos. I'm asking him to build me a house whenever he wants to build a house. To build it on Tuesdays also. He decides to do it on Shabbos. So Rabbi Natan was of the opinion that's okay. Even on Shabbos, you're allowed to do that. It's a big cool of Rabbi Natan. So most of the Rishonim disagreed with Rabbi Natan, and they said that on Shabbos and Yom Tov, according to some of the Chol HaMoed, you're right, the Ikra Din, that's okay, that's not really asking him to do it for you, but it's a Zilzul, it's a Marzayin, it's a Zilzul Shabbos, doesn't look right, the guy's coming with his equipment, he's running in his trucks, and he's working in your property, it's a Jewish property, that's not right. That's why many places can say, let's say I have construction that's being done in a non-Jewish neighborhood. Nobody Jewish in their right mind is going to be caught here on Shabbos. So then it could be that's mutter, it could be that even those who disagree with Rabbi Natan would be okay. I remember I had a fellow once who asked me about, he owned some property in downtown Newark or something. So I said, I think that one could be made till that no one's coming to IDT on no one's coming to the, it was a Prudential Center, I said, is that Newark? Yeah. So no one's coming, hopefully. Whoever's coming on Shabbos shouldn't be coming on Shabbos. So therefore, I thought that's like, the Gemara talks about chutz tchum, so even though it's not literally chutz tchum, it's enough chutz tchum for us, so that's probably okay. But a guy's got a property and wrecked the court, people are walking by and seeing trucks coming on Shabbos, so that's, most of Rishon hold that's a problem, so we wouldn't permit that. Mishnah Berura quotes that there are some who say that maybe Bizman is that, it's more lenient, because Bizman the Rishonim, so sometimes a person hired a kablan to build his house, sometimes to build it himself, so you never really know who's doing the work there. Bizman Hazeh, the Mishnah Berura already notes that Bizman Hazeh, most of the Jews weren't building their own houses, they were hiring goyim to do it. So that's where Moshe writes, that Bizman Hazeh, everybody hires their kablanos. Nobody goes to the marketplace at 9 o'clock in the morning and says, I'd like that, could somebody come and please build a foundation for my house? Everything is there, kablanos, Bizman Hazeh. So maybe the whole Marasayim, the whole Zilzum, maybe doesn't apply. So where Moshe writes that we don't really follow that. That our practice is that it's still a Zilzum, it's still a Marasayim, it still doesn't look right. So on Shabbos, we try to avoid it. Shabbos we avoid it, but for the 9 days, so the Mishnah Berurah writes, we should try to avoid it also. If you could avoid having goyim work on your houses, there are kablanas for the 9 days, that's wonderful. If for whatever reason it's just not shy, it's not going to happen, so then one would be permitted to have the goyim work at the whatever pace they have. So whenever people ask me, I always say to them, listen, try to ask the contractor if he can avoid working for that week. Matoif manoim. If he tells you a whole story, which they inevitably always tell you, they always tell you that, no, if I don't do it during the 9 days, then the whole job is not going to be finished for another 3 years. Either the fact that the guy disappeared for 3 months, you haven't seen him, so somehow it's always the time when we need him to work. It's always, everything's a davar avid, a chol amoid. All of a sudden, the guy doesn't show up for 6 months, a chol amoid becomes a davar avid. Okay, so yeah, me'ika mikra, then that would be permissible. The Mishnah Berurah quotes, I think from the Ran, if I'm not mistaken, says that binyanim shel mitzvah are for sure permissible during the 9 days. So we can read this. I'm not even going to start to tell the guys next door not to come during the 9 days. I'll let them do whatever they're doing, and they can work even on the 9 days. I've said many, many times that this room was built on Tisha B'Av, mamash on Tisha B'Av itself, because it rained for the whole week before, and they were mamash about to do the framing, and then they couldn't come. Then all of a sudden, I remember I was in Marashah, in camp, and my wife was here, and she calls me like Erev Tisha B'Av, that the guys all of a sudden, who had disappeared for 2 months, all of a sudden they came back, and they're doing the framing, kachab. So the imamish did the framing of this building on Tisha B'Av itself. That's what the Ran writes. The Ran writes derech mitzvah, mapa mitzvah, so everybody agrees that we can be mekel, because it's always being done derech kapalonis. There are other practices that the Gemara talks about Medina, that one is not allowed to do, during Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. So the Gemara talks about Asl Sapa L'Chabes. You're not allowed to get haircuts. For us, it doesn't matter, because we stopped the haircuts already from Shavuos and Tammuz. And now allowed to do laundry. So there's an Issa Kibbutz, Mikradin, during Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. For us this year, we lock out, there really is no Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av, according to most. It's a funny year, because the ninth is on Shabbos, but it's pushed off to the 10th, so there's a machlokes that we've shown him, is there even a Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av this year? So many a mekel, mikra that we probably pass it, there really is no chumas of Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av. So it's just pretty much the 9 days. So the Sfarim makes a difference, because the Sfarim have some real chilukim between Shavua Shechal Bo Tisha B'Av and the rest of the 9 days. So for Ashkenazim, there's not much of a difference, so we try to refrain from doing laundry at this time. Refrain from doing laundry means not doing laundry itself, and not wearing freshly washed clothing, with the exception of Big Day Zayah, the Chachuvin and Chazavelis quotes, that even in Oval, there's a lot of switches underwear, switches socks, things that get very sweaty and smelly, that he switches all the time, that was never included. So you shouldn't be washing those things, but you're allowed to wear fresh those things. That's what this minhag became, that any kind of clothing that's not the Big Day Zayah, so should be worn from before the 9 days. What's considered to be a Big Day Zayah? So underwear is Big Day Zayah, socks are Big Day Zayah. Every year there's a machlekes, the Rabbanim in all the camps where the shirts are Big Day Zayah, so they're mekilim on people switch their shirts all the time, so should be switching their shirts all the time, so especially in the summertime. So those are also considered to be like Big Day Zayah, so yesh v'yesh. But the pants, sweater, skirts, and the things that people wear for a couple of days, so those kinds of things, one should not be wearing freshly right out of the wash. So what do they mean? How are you going to wear them? So you have to put them on a little bit from beforehand. So that's based on a Suyinuch HaZavelis, the post can talk about that practice. If somebody wants to put on something during Shloshim, so the minig was to have somebody else would put it on for them for a little while. So here you can't have somebody else put it on, because everyone's in the same Avelis, so the minig was to put things on a little bit from beforehand. So that's the source for the practice, that everyone has fond memories from camp, of guys walking around with six pairs of pants. The guy, same guy wears the same pair of pants, but with the entire summer, never switches, but somewhere every Tisha B'Av, he's got six pairs of pants on at the same time. So it's a different mahalach. Anyway, there's a certain like mentality of, because this time of year falls out in camp season, so it's like the camps were Kaveya in Minhag Yisrael. Like the whole minhag of Klal Yisrael in America for the last 70 years was nicked back in the 1940s when the early first sleepaway camp started. That's my personal opinion on how things, the Minhag in the summer camp started. It was the early camps were Kaveya certain Minhag. Anyway, whatever it is, it's all good. I think Rav Shimon Eider was when he wrote his Kuntres on the Minhag of the 3 weeks, so that became Mamish, like the Chay. That was the go-to book for all the camps, and that became the Minhagim ad the Yemizem. There are other Minhagim that we have, particularly in Ashkenazi communities at this time of the year. There is a minig that the Poskim, the Rishon already quoted, not showering during the 9 days. So the poskim write that only applies when it's not being done because you're an istanis, you're filthy, you're dirty, you're sweaty or something. It means it's not the right time to be sitting in the jacuzzi. It's not the right time to be sitting and having a 20 minute shower or something. A person should take showers in the 9 days quickly to get dirt off and showing. So some people like to take that cold showers around the 9 days. Those who have difficulty tolerating cold showers can take hot showers. It should just be, the purpose of the shower should be very, very quick, in and out, not a time for enjoyment, just quickly soak yourself up, get yourself, get rid of the dirt and sweat, and shine. There was, of course, one of the most famous minhagim that we have during the 9 days is the minhag to refrain from Bosav Yayin. So that minhag, really, the Ramah writes, has many exceptions to the rule. And whenever it's a Sudas Mitzvah, someone is permitted to have Bosav Yayin. So on Shabbos, one is allowed to have Bosav Yayin, even Shabbos Chazon this year, which is on the ninth of Av itself. So one is permitted to have Bosav Yayin. The Gemara uses the phrase that if you have a Sudas Shlom B'Shaito, you're allowed to have like a Sudas Shlom HaMelech. So you can have a lot of meat, you can have whatever you would normally eat at the Shabbos meal, you're permitted to eat on Shabbos Chazon, even this year, after Shabbos. All the dinim of Sekas obviously don't apply this year. But most of the yayin, once you try to refrain, what else constitutes a berm shel mitzvah? So the Ramah writes that you're allowed to drink the Abdullah wine on Mitzvah Shabbos this year. It would mean the week before. There are two Shabbos technically of the 9 days this year. The second one, Shabbos Chazon, you're not going to make Abdullah to Mitzvah Tishwath anyway. But the first of the Shabbos is, so the Ramah writes, you're really allowed to drink the Abdullah wine. The Yesus says, hey, the Ramah writes, if you have a kid around who's old enough to understand how to make a bracha or something, and he's not a gil avelis of the churban, 7, 6, 7, whatever it is, so he should drink the grape, just the chachila, rather than drinking yourself. That's what the Ramah quotes in the minhag. So many people follow the practice, and many don't. Sometimes it's not practice. It's 9:30 at night, the kids are sleeping already, so there's no kid around, so you drink the grape juice yourself. I know that the Rabbi Shechter drinks the, I've seen him twice in camp. There are many, many kids around. And he says, they're legal, then you're allowed to drink it. He said, you don't play around with the kid. The kid's going to be mopsing it. He's not going to drink. So he just drinks the grape to himself. So yesh v'yesh. But many follow the practice of the Ramah of trying to give it to a kid. But mikra did. It would be permissible even for you because it's a davar shel mitzvah. It's in this context that the Ramah has this famous kula about making a siyum. That this became a whole Torah in the camps also, that you're allowed to make a siyum. So there are more stuff to put breaks on the siyum. He said, hey, make a siyum and invite the entire Jewish people. You invite people who are shaykh to you. So he starts talking about, you can have a minyan mitzumtzum, some of your friends, your relatives at different times, shivush chabot, tishbot nashvuch, different minhagim that developed in hundreds of years, as to try to, on the one hand, it's a siyum and it's okay, and you don't want to go overboard in terms of the siyum. So Ramayish had a famous kula that became the practice out of Yemazen, most of the camp settings today, where Ramayish writes that you're allowed to invite B'nai Beiso. That's the favorite. You're allowed to invite all your family members. So Ramayish writes, when you're in camp, so you're B'nai Abayis, so you're campers. You have people you eat, if you eat three meals a day with them, you eat the whole summer. So the summer day, you're B'nai Abayis. So you're allowed to invite them. You're allowed to, they can join you for the siyum, even though they don't really know you are. So you have a camp full of 1,000 kids. Some staff member is making a siyum, and most of the people don't even know who he is. It doesn't matter. Since they always eat the meals in the same dining room, they always eat together for the whole summer. That's considered to be a B'nai Abayis. Then you can extend that possibly to hotel settings also. As we were just talking about before, in the olden days, people used to go up to the Catskills. You know, the guy went for a week up to the hotel, so he was there for the 9 days. So the people in the hotel, eating your meals, say, you don't know who the guy is. It's also considered like B'nai Abayis. So Moshe was very lenient about this. A couple of years ago, so in one of the from publications, some guy came out with a strong condemnation of all the camps, how dare they do this, what bizarre it is, that they make this human right and left, and everyone's eating, and they're not the B'nai Abayis. I don't know what he wanted. I said, you want to argue Ramosha, you argue Ramosha. But Ramosha was the one who sanctioned this 50 years ago. It's in print for Ramosha, more than 70, 80 years ago, Ramosha sanctioned this practice. There's some places, I think they still do this in Ramosha Kolom. I think so. My day, they still do it. So they have siyumim once or twice a week. It's hard to find other food. It's hard to feed kids the milchiks all week. So the camps have been somewhat lenient about this. But I think it's not 100% appropriate. It's somebody's like siyumim to go over here. You walk into a certain restaurant. So there's a guy on call at the restaurant every night making siyum. That's a little bit inappropriate. So, but there are places that the guys at the gas station Thursday night for children, the guys making the seal. So a little bit of a little bit much. You know. Usually, basically, the amount of siyum usually corresponds to what mesechta is up to in Daf Yomi. If it's the end of Moed cycle, so usually got a bunch of guys who got a lot of short siyum. All the siyum of mesechta is tamid, you know, and then you always get all the questions about the guys making a siyum on Pirkei Avos, the guys making a siyum on Mavasedra, the guys making a siyum on Aleph Beis. You know, every people have different degrees of siyum. So one should be careful that it shouldn't become chokhot, it shouldn't become mamash, stamma leitzonis. Again, it's supposed to be tzioni dorish einla, it's supposed to be mishkachet mishalayim, it's supposed to take this with a degree of seriousness. So in addition to the time frame of Rosh Chodesh Tisha B'Av and Mishneh Chazav, there's a whole unique time frame of Erev Tisha B'Av itself. This is also within the Mishneh Gemara about what the Siddur Mavsech is supposed to look like in Basar Yayin and Shnei Tavshilin, etc. But the Ma'aseh said this year none of that applies because this year Erev Tisha B'Av was on in the Shabbos, so then Shabbos if you look at Siddur Shlom B'Shaito. After Tisha B'Av is over, all the Avelos really should disappear. So on a regular year, it doesn't disappear yet because the Gemara says in Maseches Tainis that basically still burnt into the 10th day of Av. So the Minhag Yisrael became in many communities to extend some of the Minhag in the 9 days into at least till Chatzos. That's what Amidin is. Some extended it for the whole day and some into the morning. Amidin became till Chatzos. So that's what the standard Minhag Ashkenaz is. Or whatever you wouldn't do during the 9 days, you don't do it till Chatzos. This year, that Minhag doesn't apply because it's already the 11th day of Av. So that's good for the camps, because otherwise that extra, especially some people going on trips the day after Tisha B'Av this year, it's a big balagan. Laundry is always a major crisis. So this year the laundry can begin the minute that Tisha B'Av is over, so laundry can start. No, so the minig is in Bosa V'Yayin. Even on a year like this year, we wouldn't have Bosa V'Yayin, except for the Havdalah wine. We wouldn't have Bosa V'Yayin. That's like a bizoid a little bit, Tisha B'Av. But the other things are laundry and other things are head to gama. So those who want to take care of those kinds of things can do so. Okay, hopefully we advertise the shiur being Yom Yom. Hopefully it won't be Yom Yom. Maybe we're going to make the shiur bizoichah together in Eretz Yisrael, Shalayim, to celebrate the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. Those who I won't see, so I wish everybody a good summer, but summer party for the next day or two, so.